Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So today we are shifting gears a little bit. Usually we're pulling from this massive stack of articles and journals from all over the world. But, well, today we're keeping it local.
We really are. We're focusing right here on our own community at
Yeah.
Harmony Christian Church. I mean, we're both members, we were both in the room, and we just wanted to take this time to really unpack the message we heard from Pastor Kent Wagner.
That's right. The sermon was called Entrusted for the Kingdom. And let's be honest, if you're listening to this, there's a good chance you're on your way to work, maybe doing dishes, and you're trying to get your head in the game for your Connect group this week.
Which is exactly why we're doing this. Consider this your cheat sheet. Our goal isn't just to, repeat what Kent said. It's to give you the recap, the highlights, those aha moments, so you can walk in ready to actually talk.
Instead of just nodding along.
Exactly. Because Sunday morning can feel like a blur by like Wednesday night. And Kent was really clear this wasn't just another speech. He said his goal right at the top was to implant a virus in our minds.
Yeah, that phrase definitely got my attention. I mean, given the last few years, using the word virus in a church service is a bold move.
It is, but it makes sense when you think about it. He wanted to introduce an idea, a virus for the gospel, he called it, that just infects the whole operating system of how we view our stuff.
Something you can't shake.
Yeah, something that fundamentally changes how you look at your bank account, your talents, everything.
And to get that virus planted, he started with a story that I think made every parent in the room physically cringe. The Wii bowling incident.
Oh, you could hear the groan. It was audible. Everyone had a flashback to a broken phone or a cracked screen.
It was the perfect setup, though.
Yeah,
So for anyone who missed it, the scene is Ken and his wife Jenny are upstairs cooking dinner, peaceful domestic bliss.
and downstairs, his teenage sister-in-law and her friend are playing on the Wii.
Which, for anyone who doesn't remember the mid-2000s, that little remote was basically a heavy plastic brick you'd swing around, and there was one golden rule.
The wrist strap.
Yeah.
Have to wear the safety strap.
Right. So he's upstairs, he hears them giggling, everything's fine, and then it just stops.
The silence.
Complete silence, which, as a parent, that is the single most terrifying sound in the world.
No, absolutely. Noise is fine. Silence means something is very, very wrong.
Immediate panic. And then they hear these footsteps, and this sound Kent described so vividly. He said it sounded like a dog breathing really fast.
Oh.
But it wasn't a dog.
No. It was a teenage girl hyperventilating because she knows she's about to confess to a major crime.
She comes upstairs, tears streaming down her face, and the story comes out. Wii bowling, no strap.
The friend went for the strike, let the remote go, and it just flew right into Kent's big flat screen TV.
And this wasn't just any TV. He called it the Star of Bethlehem of TVs. This is back when that was a huge deal, a prized possession. So this is the key moment. He's standing there, staring at this shattered screen, and he tries to be the good Christian man. He suppresses all that rage. And he looks at them and says, "It's okay. It's only a thing. It's just a TV."
Which is the right thing to say, right? We're taught people matter more than things.
Exactly. But the story doesn't end there. The girls go back downstairs, totally relieved. Kent's probably fuming inside. And a few minutes later, he hears them start giggling again.
Oh
And then
no.
worse, he hears them start making jokes about the broken TV.
And that's when the mask comes off. Yeah.
Instantly, he just snaps. He turns and says, "It's not funny. It may only be a thing, but it was my thing.
Boom, there it is. That's the virus.
It may only be a thing, but it was my thing."
And Kent just flips that right on us. He says that's exactly how God views our lives. We look at our money, our skills, our influence, and we say, oh, it's just my life. It's not a big deal.
Right.
But God is looking down and saying, yes, they are things, but they are my things, and I entrusted them to you.
That one little shift from ownership to stewardship, that's the whole ballgame. And it pushes against the story we love in our culture.
The myth of the self-made man or woman.
We worship that idea, the person who pulled themselves up by their bootstraps. I built this with my own two hands.
And Kent was clear. He wasn't knocking hard work. That's not the point. The point is challenging where our success actually comes from. He kept talking about the luck factor, or, for us, the God factor.
Yeah, these wild examples, the stories about his friend from Oswego, Kansas. I mean, they were almost unbelievable.
Yeah, Oswego connection. So you've got a guy from this tiny town. Statistically, he should not be, a major player. But somehow he ends up running campaigns for Arnold Schwarzenegger and George W. Bush.
It's right place, right time. But the story that really blew my mind was the famous Amos Cookie story.
That one sounded like a movie script. It really did.
So this same friend is on an oil rig in the 80s. And apparently the culture on oil rigs back then was, let's just say it was loose.
A polite way to put it. Yeah, he said basically everyone else was doing cocaine.
Right. So this friend, he's not into that. He's just standing there bored while everyone else is partying. And this other guy walks up, pulls a cookie out of his pocket, and says, "Hey, want a cookie?"
And that guy was Wally Amos.
They start talking. The friend has a marketing background. Amos makes amazing cookies. They team up and boom, famous Amos cookies. All because he didn't do drugs and stood next to the right person.
It's a funny story, but the point is so humbling. The friend just says, "I'm lucky. It all just fell into my lap." And Ken's challenge is, can we look at our own lives with that same honesty?
And he brought in scripture to back it up. 1 Corinthians 4:7. What do you have that you did not receive?
And James 1:17, every good and perfect gift is from above. We think we're smart because we got good grades, but we didn't choose the brain we were born with. We didn't choose our parents or where we grew up.
We didn't choose to be born now instead of, the year 1024.
Exactly. Those are all bags of gold that were given to us, which leads right into the main text of the sermon, the parable of the talents.
Yeah, most of us know this one. A master goes on a trip, gives his wealth to three servants, five bags of gold to one, two to another, one to the last one.
And Kent pointed out a detail I always miss. He gave according to their ability. He knew what they could handle. He wasn't setting them up for failure.
Right. So the first two guys, they get to work, they invest, they trade, they double the money. The third guy, he grabs a shovel.
Digs a hole, buries the money, plays it safe.
Master comes back. The first two get the well done, good and faithful servant. But the third guy, I mean, the master's furious. He calls him wicked and lazy.
And that's where people get hung up. It feels so harsh. He didn't lose the money. Why is God so angry about that?
This is where Kent's modern analogy just made it all click for me. The real estate analogy.
Oh, that was so good. Yeah.
Okay, so imagine you inherit $2 million. You take half, $1 million, and just go on a 2-year vacation. You blow through it, have the time of your life.
But the other million, you give to an investment manager. You say, buy some real estate. Grow this for me while I'm gone.
You come back 2 years later, happy but broke. You go to the manager and say, "So how do we do?" And he says, "I bought a great house."
Awesome. What's the return? What'd we make?
And the manager says, "Well, actually, I was afraid of the market, so I just let my family live there for free,
Oh, yeah.
and they kind of trashed it. So it's actually worth less now."
You would be furious. You would fire him on the spot.
Because he was entrusted with capital and was expected to produce a return. That's why the master is angry. God isn't looking for a safety deposit box. He's looking for an ROI.
A return on investment. And that sounds so like corporate, so Wall Street. But Kent was really pushing us to see that the capital, the bags of gold, aren't just money.
Right. That's the big misunderstanding. We hear talents and we think cash, or maybe being able to sing on the worship team.
And if you can't do either, you think, well, this sermon isn't for me. But Kent said the bags of gold are your personality, the things that make you you.
He asked a question that I think made everyone squirm a little. He just looked out and asked, "Are you pretty?"
Which is so taboo in church. We're not supposed to talk about that. But his story from his youth pastor days just landed it perfectly.
He said he used to tell the popular kids to kind of tone it down, to stop making the other kids feel bad. He was accidentally teaching them to bury their talent of influence.
Right, it's this false humility. But then he had this big shift. He realized humility isn't denying a gift, it's using it for other people. So he started telling them, don't stop being popular, use it. You have the social capital to go invite the lonely kid to sit at your table.
When you give a compliment, it means more. It's about weaponizing your gifts for the kingdom instead of for your own ego.
It's just leveraging who you are. If you're organized, use that. If you're funny, use that. The question isn't, why do I have this? It's, who is this for?
Okay, so we've got the theory. What did this actually look like for us this week, heading into our Connect groups?
He gave us two main action steps: find your people and find your purpose.
Find your people is pretty straightforward. Join a group.
Oh.
But he used Amber, who organizes all the groups, as an example.
Yeah, and this was subtle but so important. Amber doesn't love spreadsheets and logistics because she has a passion for data entry. She invests her organizational talent because it helps other people find their people. She creates a return in their lives.
And for the rest of us, it's just get in a group. You need people to hold up a mirror and say, "Hey, you're actually really good at this. You should do something with that."
Then he went to find your purpose. And the examples were so normal, which I loved. He talked about Josh Adkins.
Baseball coach, right?
Right. Josh could just be a great coach who teaches kids how to hit. And that's a good thing. But to make it a kingdom thing, he prays with them. He mentors them. He takes his secular skill and gives it an eternal purpose.
And then Carlos. I think everyone at Harmony knows Carlos.
Carlos the encourager.
The story about him leaving a drink on Kent's desk every single week. It's not about the drink. It's the thought.
Kent said he just changes the atmosphere of a room. That is a bag of gold.
Yeah.
And it's so accessible, you don't need a degree for that.
Then he pivoted to parenting. And this part hit me hard. He totally flipped the script on what Christian parenting is supposed to look like.
Yeah, we have this idea that it's like perfect family devotions where no one is fighting. It feels so fake and impossible.
But Kent argued that the real investment is vulnerability.
It's coming home from a bad day and saying to your kids, listen, Dad is really struggling right now. I'm tired, I'm angry, and I'm asking God to help my attitude.
That's investing. You're not showing them perfection. You're showing them how a broken person depends on Jesus.
And Kent used that phrase again. He said that kind of parenting depopulates hell. It secures the faith for the next generation.
Depopulate hell. That's a mission statement right there.
It all ties back to how he defined a kingdom. He said, a kingdom is a place where someone's will rules and reigns.
And, you know, as Americans, we kicked kings out a long time ago. We're not comfortable with that idea of submitting to someone else's will.
We want to be the kings of our own little kingdoms. My house, my rules. But the question is, are you building your kingdom for your comfort? Or are you building his?
Which brings us to the twist at the end of the parable. I had never really caught this before. In that time, if a servant doubled his master's money, the reward would just be more work.
Right. Good job. Here's more to manage. Get back out there.
But that's not what Jesus' master says. He says, come and share your master's happiness.
And that changes everything. The reward isn't more labor. It's relationship. It's an invitation to the party, to sit at the table.
It reframes the whole motivation. We're not working just because we're afraid of being yelled at.
Mm-hmm.
We're investing because the end goal is joy. The end goal is being with him.
And look at the third servant. His motivation was fear. I knew you were a hard man. He didn't have a relationship, just this terrifying idea of the master. And because of that fear, he did nothing. He buried it.
That's the danger. If you see God as just a harsh judge, you're going to hide. If you see him as a father inviting you into his happiness, you'll take risks. You'll invest.
Precisely.
So as we wrap this up, this is the question for you to take into your Connect group this week and really wrestle with it.
It's a tough question, Kent asked. What are you burying?
We all have something. Maybe it's a talent you think isn't spiritual enough, like you're great with numbers or you're a good athlete.
Maybe it's money you're hoarding for a rainy day instead of being generous right now.
Or your influence. Are you just using it to climb the ladder for yourself, or are you looking for ways to lift other people up?
The vision is to change family trees and depopulate hell. And that only happens when we stop acting like owners and start acting like investors for God.
So take that virus with you. Look at your car, your bank account, your sense of humor, and tell yourself, it may be a thing, but it's his thing.
And he's looking for a return.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Use this to start the conversation. Be honest in your group. What are you burying? Where do you struggle with this idea of being entrusted?
Because the goal isn't just to be a self-made success. The goal is to hear, well done, good and faithful servant.
That's it for this deep dive. We'll see you at church, and we'll see you in your Connect groups. Let's go invest.
See you there.